The place to be is living free. Living free in Tennessee.
Welcome to Living Free in Tennessee, where we talk about building the life you choose on your terms. Today is Monday, March 25th, 2024, and this is episode 886 of Living Free in Tennessee. And if you are watching the live stream today and usually depend on the audio download on your phone, you will notice that your latest episode is 884, which just went out this morning. And that was last week's Wednesday interview. And a lot of what this show is about will kind of revolve around what happened there. I am hoping that everybody in the comments section can hear what I'm saying. I had a total technology meltdown about 15 minutes ago in my studio where, although everything's plugged in the way it's supposed to be, things weren't talking to things, and I did a reboot and checked settings, and hopefully we're good to go. It was just a little bit, crunchy in here, basically. Mona says she can hear me, so we're good today. So today I have a live recording of our Monday show, and I'm going to catch you up on Sheep Birthing Week, as well as do most of our usual segments. I'm keeping the show short today because of homestead requirements. There's a lot of work needed right now to keep animals alive. And I'm going to make sure I get off this live stream and then figure out if I'm going to help Tactical move a doghouse that just blew down the hill, which was a little confusing to me. So that was my latest message from him. That's never happened. We've had that thing for it's on skids. We've had it for more than a year, and never has the wind picked it up and blown it. And it's not particularly windy today. So I don't know how in the world that happened, but that's the latest news from the pasture. I should just do a From the Pasture bulletin every time I get weird messages from the pasture. Before we jump into the main topic of today's show, I do want to talk about our featured event for today, and that's the Self-Reliance Festival. You can get tickets at selfrelianceFestival.com and see Angry American. You can see Joel Riles. You can meet John Willis. You can meet me. You can see Toolman Tim Cook speak. Nick Ferguson's going to be there. It is a darned good lineup. I actually just got an expert counsel question about privacy and preserving your privacy. And they were asking me, if I use GoDaddy, will it preserve my privacy? And we have a speaker on Sunday talking about taking ownership for your digital sovereignty. And that's all over at selfrelianceFestival.com. The event is April 6th and 7th, and it is getting close, guys. I also want to thank our two sponsors of today's show. Sponsor number one is AgoristTaxAdvice.com. AgoristTaxAdvice.com has been supporting the show since we offered sponsorships. He was one of the first to sign up. And what he does is work with you to evaluate your finances and then help you understand a better tax structure to take advantage of the tax code. Because you want to take advantage of the tax code and take the write-offs you should be. And he also talks about how to track them, not falling behind on filings, those sorts of things. Find out more at agoristtaxadvice.com. If you go to agoristtaxadvice.com/LFTN, you can sign up for his newsletter, which is a weekly email that's super helpful. The reason I look confused is my computer is not charging, but it's plugged in. So I feel like we've had just yet another meltdown in the studio. So if it looks urgent, I may take a break to run around and check to see why. Oh, I see why. This end is plugged in, but for some reason that end is not plugged in. Very confusing. It's like elves came into my studio while I was gone this weekend and reset everything. Our second sponsor of today's show is EMP Shield. EMP Shield creates a device that will protect your whole house against unpredictable electricity things like getting hit by a lightning bolt on your power line or the transformer outside your house, which can send that power surge into your home and wreak havoc. It would certainly wreak havoc on my studio, although not on my computer right now because it's not plugged in. Anyway, EMP Shield has a wall of fame where their devices have been fried by things. And they're very proud of it. And the reason they're proud of it is they know that because their devices got fried by the surges, people's things on the other side of those devices did not. And they are so confident that their device will help you in such a situation that they offer replacement insurance if it fails and the surge gets through. You can find out more about those at empshield.com. If you use the coupon code LFTN for Living Free in Tennessee, that gets you $50 off, which ain't a bad thing. This week, I have a couple of extra live streams. So I was asked to be on some shows this week, and they're both today. So at 5 p.m., I'm on with Tag from Life Done Free. We're going to talk about developing a durable life. And then at 7 p.m., I'm on with Ken Esch for a small business startup discussion. The links to that are both in the show notes. And if you are on the YouTube live stream in about an hour, I should have the show posted after we finish, assuming that we do not have more birthing assistance needs. And that will have the links as well. Or if you follow me on social, I've already put it out. I've already shared it. So you can go there as well. And if you ever want to just keep up with what's going on, think about going to Telegram and joining our channel, our Living Free in Tennessee channel, which is not a discussion group. It just, I just post the things that are happening throughout the day. Okay. Other than that, our live stream schedule is as usual, and I've decided that you don't want me to go over it one item by one item when you hear the same thing every week. So that will also be in the show notes, but we don't have any craziness this week. Next week, we are not doing the shows. We are doing a Tuesday Live next week with Jack Spierko. And other than that, it's all about Self-Reliance Festival. So next week is a week off. I do have one previously recorded show that we'll play next week as well from a doctor talking about functional medicine, but also about medical preparedness. And I think you'll really enjoy that show. Okay, with that, it's time for our first segment of today's show. And that's Tales from the Prepper Pantry, where we talk about storing what you use and using what you store. And I was at Kentucky Sustainable Living talking about pantry management this weekend. So that was fun. I met a bunch of people I'd never met, and it was really nice to be at an event I wasn't organizing. And then gave the talk. I was only there for one of their 2 days because with Self-Reliance Festival, as close as it is, I needed to get home and work on stuff. And it turned out to be really a good thing that I was home yesterday because of what ended up happening here. Anyway, I made 20 deviled eggs. So egg season is upon us. And when I make deviled eggs, they get eaten very quickly around here because it's like, I call it breakfast charcuterie. That's what we had today. So I had deviled eggs, sliced meats, some other things out that you could just sort of pick at that were just straight out of the fridge to the counter, which is great when you're super busy because it's like, okay, I've got the healthy food because it's pre-made stuff and it's from our homestead. But at the same time, I didn't need to cook breakfast because it was all done. So that happened, and I've never made 20 deviled eggs at once. I put them in the sous vide at 170 or 175, I can't remember, degrees for 45 minutes, forgot to set a timer, guessed at how long that was. It was long enough, thank goodness. So that's how I hard-boiled that many eggs. And what I did is I let the water get up to temperature first before putting the eggs in. I did chicken and duck eggs, and the chicken eggs were, they fell apart a little bit more, like for when I was peeling, they were sticking to the shells. And I usually age my eggs about a week. So I think what happened there is some people put some eggs on the wrong tray because I have a dedicated aging tray of eggs so that I can do deviled eggs with them more easily. But the duck eggs peeled beautifully. So we're getting into a point where we're getting enough duck eggs if we collect the eggs every day that I don't really need to eat chicken eggs, which is great because then I can sell chicken eggs. I also tapped into a box of elbow-length nitrile gloves to intervene with livestock this week, and those were shipped to me by a listener as a military surplus. And he sent me a whole box of like tourniquets and other stuff, and I remember seeing these nitrile gloves that went all the way up to your wrist thinking, who would use those and why? And I'm like, well, now I know. And actually, the ones that only go to your base of your wrist, if you're intervening with anything medically, then, well, you can still get blood on your arm, right? Which is something you want to avoid to keep from catching the nasties from other people or animals. So I was actually super stoked we had those because there were no birthing gloves available for purchase at any of the stores that we went, that we contacted. So that's apparently you can just put that in the category of canning jar lids. Get your canning jar lids at this time of year because when everybody's canning, the store runs out, right? So birthing gloves, when everybody's birthing, then they run out of birthing gloves. Same idea. And I was just really thankful we had those. I had some friends with some I could have driven to get, but luckily we had those on hand. And they're now in the birthing kit that we have for helping with births, which is a lot of what today's show is about. I'm tapping into the bone broth that's canned to stay healthy. I'm fighting a cold pretty hard right now from all of the lack of sleep in the last 10 days or so. And also, I've been like all winter long when cooking something that could be, you know, I could cook it for two people or four. I've been cooking for four and then putting half in the freezer, knowing that between now and the Living Free in Tennessee Spring Workshop, it gets really busy. And when it gets really busy, it's hard for me to be able to cook sometimes. So having those ready to reheat meals is super cool. We're having pre-made hamburger patties today for dinner, I believe, unless I find something else more. Oh, there's a stew in there to pull out too that's pretty delicious. So we've had pre-made meatloaves and a whole bunch of other stuff in the last week or so with everything going on. And then with time being short with Self-Reliance Festival, also just around the corner, and then the webinar series, like you can imagine that had I not done that, it would have been a lot of Chinese takeout or Mexican takeout the last couple of weeks. So I'm actually super glad I've had those because eating on planet, eating the food we grow helps me have a better nutritional connection with the land, but it's also better for me and helps me keep my immune system up. So that's been a win this time. I cannot find my echinacea flower that I harvested last year to be able to use in teas, which is frustrating because I'm fighting a cold and I was like, oh, I know I'll put echinacea in my herbal tea this afternoon. And I was like, never mind. I will just have other things in there. So I used rose petals, which can give you a boost of vitamin C. And I am hitting the vitamin C as well right now under the understanding that it would be really nice not to get sick, like not to get truly sick, like feeling a little under the weather, fine. But I like it is not in my agenda or schedule to get sick. So I don't want to get sick. And the herbal tea collection has been in a bin and difficult to find things in until today when I went looking for the echinacea. So I have a shelf that I've put up in my kitchen for it, and it's going to work beautifully for storing all of the teas that I have, which is good because I wasn't sure how to store them without any cabinets in my kitchen because my kitchen no longer has most of its cabinets. And then I was like, well, how do I put stuff away? So this one shelf is perfect for mason jars. It goes three deep. And so I can do sort of like herbal teas. I can do black teas. I can do other things in mason jars, and it's awesome. And then, of course, I still need to attain vinegar. I hope to make it through April 7th without needing to actually, like, legitimately go buy vinegar because it would be nice not to have to walk into Sam's Club until things are a little bit less scheduled out. I am skipping a couple segments this week, and I'm going to skip the shopping report. But if you want to go check out what Joe is up to, join our MeWe group. It's MeWe.com, and then look for Living Free in Tennessee. And he posts his shopping report there every week. Plus, it's a great community to talk with. I'm also skipping the frugality tip this week. So our next segment is Operation Independence. This is where we talk about building local ongoing revenue into our lives. And also about using skills so you can avoid the need to pay a guy sometimes. So we had to make some hard decisions in the last week with birthing season upon us. And for context, we've always had pretty easy birthing seasons, and this one has not been. And we had something happen yesterday where I could have saved the sheep. And it was not something that like a disease where you don't want to eat the meat. And I was getting all ready to intervene and made the decision to cull her because even if I saved her, like she wasn't going to be able to safely be pregnant again without the same intervention needing to happen. And so I was sitting in the pasture going, well, she's big enough to butcher and we know we're going to butcher her. So why fix the thing only to butcher her? And that sort of decision on the homestead comes up a lot. And everybody has a different line for that. I was just sitting there yesterday thinking, and finally we just decided to go for it, which means we have more lamb meat here. It's hanging right now in Nighthawk's fridge. And by hanging, I mean in trays, because it's not hanging. but it is, we quartered it, her, and then it's in there for 5 to 7 days before I actually process the meat. And I need to go look at it this evening and make sure it's not sitting in juices. I don't want it sitting in juices. The reason you hang is so that it's not sitting in juices. If you end up keeping it moist like that, I think you can invite some mold, and we don't want mold. What we want is for the meat to, you know, kind of tenderize itself, sort of thing. And then later this week, I will do finer cuts and throw it in the freezer, and then I will grind it after Self-Reliance Festival. So I expect I have an hour or two of butchering to do this week. And hey, on that note, my speaker gift at Kentucky Sustainable Living was some butchering knives. So that's really good, complimentary, as a matter of fact. So, you know, I went to that event and I'm looking at this whole ag center that they rented in. And I'm like, yep, it'd be really nice to have that kind of infrastructure for Self-Reliance Festival, because it's got like flushing toilets and an arena. And that was pretty cool. Anyway, so with that, it's time for the main topic of today's show. I want to remind people who are in the live stream, if you have a question, put the word question in all caps, and I will do my best to work it into the podcast. So today's title is All Creatures Great and Small. And for those of you who are old like I am, you'll remember there was a book by that title that was out. It was written in the late 60s. It was popular in the 70s. I read it as a child. And it was written by a veterinarian who, about providing rural veterinary care in the 30s and 40s. And it ended up being the first book in a series. I think his next book was All Creatures Bright and Beautiful. And that book, if you have not, yeah, it's James Herriot. If you have not read that book and you are into homesteading and you are into livestock, or you're thinking about livestock, or you're thinking about homesteading and livestock, is a really good book to read, because it gives you a view of what raising livestock is like from the veterinarian's standpoint. And I can tell you, our veterinarian has had multiple calls for me in the last 7 days. And the last call we had, she's like, when is birthing season over for you, Nicole? And I was like, I have one more. I have one more sheep who needs to go, and then we're done. And I have another friend who's also in birthing season, and it's been weeks because they were not bred at the same time. And so she's like, I'm never doing this again. I'm going to do them all at once. And I'm like, you know, I might want to talk to you about if that's a good idea or not. Anyway, after this last week. But that book is, it's a fiction novel, right? But it's based on experiences that he had over the years. So technically it's fiction, but it's also based on his experience as a country veterinarian. And as I was, you know, getting ready to think about, like, usually I have my Monday topic chosen the week before so that we can promote it. And everything went off the rails last week in that regard. So as I was thinking about it, and I was writing to people who I had not gotten emails back to, who needed emails back this weekend, I was like, I'm sorry. I'm basically living real life All Creatures Great and Small right now, which has meant that I have prioritized livestock care over everything else. And, you know, so here's your late email. And I was like, you know, that's probably what my podcast should be about, is like the week of All Creatures Great and Small, and the things we do on a homestead and what can happen on a homestead. I was joking with Tactical yesterday that, okay, I was like, I'm going to go sit in the pasture because I want to hang out with the bottle fed sheep that we have while she's in the pasture, to see how she's interacting with the other sheep, because our goal with her is that she interacts with sheep as much as possible. I say that and she's over here warming up because she kind of got cold today outside. But I was like, I'm going to go do that. And then I'm going to come back and I'm going to dive into this other big project I want to work on Sunday. And then, you know, whatever. And then we had Sunday dinner with all our neighbors all scheduled to go. And we get over there and I'm looking at all the sheep and I'm really hoping that Bruni has given birth and Bruni has not given birth. And I look over at one of the sheep and she had a prolapse. And a prolapse is when the vagina is coming out, basically. And this was one of my sheep who wasn't pregnant. So that was unexpected. And she was one of the younger girls. And so I it was like the best laid plans just go to outer space. And then I left some pretty funny messages for people about, I have a prolapsed vagina, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, I mean, not me, it's the sheep, but you know, like, what do I do? And a friend of mine offered me a prolapse harness and to have her wear. And we went through this whole thing. And I realized what you do is you put it back in and then you have to keep it in. So the way veterinarians do that is they stitch it so it will hold it back in. And assuming the sheep doesn't get an infection, like, they go back to normal, but they are more prone to that happening repeatedly after that's happened. And so most sheep farmers, what they do is they put it back in, stitch it in. When the lambs are born, if the sheep is pregnant, then they let her raise them and then they're going to process the sheep because she's going to have this problem over and over. And it does not make sense, both from a torturing of the sheep standpoint and from a financial standpoint, to support a repeatedly prolapsing sheep. Well, this was one of our younger twin girls who should not have been pregnant and was not showing any pregnancy. And so I thought, well, maybe she got pregnant, had a miscarriage, and also got the prolapse. But if that's the case, like, that's not great. And so I spent a good, I sat in the pasture while Tactical ran around gathering supplies for this, because what we don't have is a birthing kit in a bin, which is something we are going to have after this week. And it needs to have lubricant, towels, gloves, birthing gloves, probably a few like glucose/vitamin E sorts of things. I haven't decided what that needs to have. It does not need to have bottle feeding stuff. Trying to think of what else. Oh, dog collars or, wow, Zoom's getting all involved. Does my audio still work? Please put yes or no in the comments. Anyway, it needs to have some things like that that work for birthing. I'd like to have sheep halters instead of collars. We've been using dog collars on the sheep when we need to grab them. And then it's like easier to hang on to a collar versus not a collar. So all of those things need iodine, Mona says. Absolutely. And guys, I've got to plug my computer in. So give me 2 seconds. The next thing that was going to happen is the podcast was going to go, and that was going to be it. So that's going to be fun for the folks in the audio podcast. So I was calling around to see if I could get birthing gloves because we didn't have any on hand, which was a mistake. I should have actually had that, but we've never had births that require any intervention. But somebody who listens to the podcast sent me nitrile gloves that go up to my elbows, which I remembered. And I said, well, go check in the storage area for those gloves that go up to our elbows. I assume we have boxes of those there. And Tactical looked at me. He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, okay. If you go into the Basecamp storage area, you'll see bins of tourniquets. It's all organized, right? You'll see gloves. Those gloves, assuming we still have some left, which I think we do, go up to my elbows, which is enough for me to put my arm into into the vagina of the sheep to do what we need to do with the prolapse and not get exposed to diseases from her. And so he was off doing all of that. And we had I was staying in the pasture just to keep an eye on her to see if the prolapse got worse. And I was, reading, because I'd read about what to do about a prolapse before, but then I was like, but now I got to do something about it, right? I have to actually do the thing. And I read about it. And as I read more and more about it, I was like, we're going to cull this sheep. She's not pregnant. And even if she were pregnant, she's on the smaller side. And I don't think we want her trying to give birth anyway at the size and age that she is. So I think the answer is that she needs to go to freezer camp. And then it was one of our named animals that we liked. So her name was Red. And yes, we can do the deed if we need to. But I have holler neighbors who are not as attached to the sheep. So I hit up Nighthawk and I was like, hey, are you willing to do the deed and skin her? And then I'll do the rest. And he's like, sure. And then the Steve Eversole also came over to help because we were going to get her out of the pasture, loaded up on Steve's four-wheeler, which is a side-by-side, and away from the herd to do the processing. Well, to do all of it, because I didn't want to just like have gunfire in the pasture and freak everybody out. And then Steve came over with his gun. He's like, because he's willing to as well. And basically what ended up happening, we have a holding area. So this is something we've done that's really cool. And we're probably going to move where it is. But right now we have four cattle panels that are with T-post and zip tied together, except for one corner where we can take a sheep down there or two sheep or whatever and put them in that little pen if we need to quarantine them, if we need to do anything with them, if we need to retrain them on electric fencing, we'll put electric fencing in. And then if they hit it and go forward, they hit a barrier and they pull back. So that's what we have. And we can feed them hay and water in there. And we brought her down to that. And that was, it also turns out to be a really good pen for if you need to cull an animal. And I was like, well, that worked out really well because with the cattle panels being the walls, you're not like in a barn where you could accidentally shoot the side of the barn and which then puts a hole in the barn or whatever. And it's somewhere where we didn't have to have her on a lead so she could run around and sort of calm down. And then all of a sudden she was just no longer with us, which is how I like to see that done. So that all happened. And then Nighthawk and Steve did everything. They were like, hey, we got her done. Where do you want her to be? Like which fridge are we putting her in? And that was the end to a very long week. So the week started last Saturday, not the one 2 days ago, but the one before. We had our Homesteaders Alliance meetup and seed saver thing. And we had triplets be born right after everybody left. And so I've been over in the pasture a couple times a day, observing how the triplets are interacting with their mom to make sure that everybody's getting milk. Because the risk with triplets is that sheep only have two tits and that's three animals going after two. And I have two boys and a girl. And it's most likely that the two rams will be more aggressive about getting the food and the girl will need some assistance. And the mom's been really great. So I was really hoping we wouldn't have to have a bottle lamb from that, and we haven't. And then, so we were over there observing, keeping our eye on the other pregnant ewes. And we had a pregnant ewe here with the ram here, and we had some pregnant ewes over there. Well, the one here was on the small side too. So I was really worried about her. And I was worried about the fact she's with this ram because this ram, I haven't seen how he acts around birth. So I didn't know if he'd get, you know, kill the babies when they were born. So just sort of been keeping an eye on that. Okay. So then we were over there, gosh, Tuesday morning. I was like, okay, it's time for me to go look. And I think Tactical may have been the one. Yeah, Tactical went. So I went over first thing in the morning. No sheep. Nobody was born. He went over midday and all I hear, and it was shortly before my live stream with John Willis. No, it was Wednesday. Yeah, it was Wednesday. So he was over there and it was shortly before my live stream with Matt Williams, which just got out on the audio podcast today from Nightbridge. He was like, okay, we've just got a second set of triplets. And so I came over and what happens sometimes when they're born is that the whole flock gets a little weird. And so some some moms and babies are on the wrong side of the fence. Like, it was total sheep chaos over there. And there was, you know, the triplets were with their mom on the wrong side of the fence, except for two of the three triplets, the ones that had been born Saturday. And one was inside, like, screaming because it couldn't get to its mom because there was an electric fence between it. The other set of triplets, two were with mom and one was off to the side, like way off to the side. So she had been abandoned. And what you do in this situation, if you can get the mom, is you like tie them up together in closed environments so that the baby has access to the milk and just hope that they attach. That's your best scenario. Well, we did not have the capacity to do that. But we did catch the mom, get a collar on her, hold her, and get the baby on her to get colostrum. And the baby got some colostrum, but not a lot of colostrum, and then was, you know, being abandoned again. And so I decided to take her back to the house to bottle feed her. We got colostrum supplement, and she ate that for the rest of the day, and she's been eating lamb milk replacer ever since. And we reached out to the network of homesteaders around us and did finally find lamb milk. So I have a source for lamb milk now for her, but she's been on the other stuff. So we have to kind of like slowly move her over if we're going to do that. And here's the thing. We don't know if she got enough colostrum on the first day, and she probably didn't, but we don't know until we know. And what happens with baby lambs is they'll go for a few weeks. And then if they didn't get enough colostrum, they will die. So she is like energetic, thriving, eating, like super adorable. And we don't know if she's going to live or not. But it's, you know, at first she was being fed every 2 hours. Now she's every 4 hours and 15 minutes. And we're slowly moving her to higher volume, fewer times per day so that we can actually get some sleep. I told Tactical that he had to trade off with me last Saturday night because I was going to Kentucky Sustainable Living and coming back. And I'm like, listen, after driving to an event the morning of, being at the event, and then driving back home and getting home at like 9 o'clock, I'm going to be really tired and probably need to get some sleep. And I've been up, you know, several times a night the night before. So if you could do that nighttime feeding, that would be super awesome. And he did. And he was like a ninja. He came because she's in my house in a dog crate at night, so she doesn't get too cold. And I haven't been keeping my house as warm as usual because I don't want it too warm because I don't want her used to that. So he came in like a ninja and did not wake me up and fed her. And she was absolutely silent. And then I did her 6 o'clock in the morning feeding because I'm up by then anyway. So we've been getting into a rhythm with that. Well, then another sheep on Friday morning, I could tell she was going to go into labor Thursday. So he looked at her before he went to bed and she was not in labor at 11 at night. And at 6 in the morning, he's like, she's in labor. And I came out and there was 1 foot and a nose sticking out. And it looked like it had been sticking out for a while. She was clearly having trouble delivering. And sheep need to have both feet up and the nose out to come out. And that helps the dilation happen properly. And apparently when, instead of sort of wedging out, if you're hitting it sideways or the head of the animal is to the side, or it's got its shoulders up instead of flat, it can, instead of, you know, triggering dilation, it can cause just sort of a thinning of the cervical wall, and they get stuck. And that's not great. So what you do in that situation is you do your best to get the lamb into position. Sometimes you have to push him back in to get him into position, and hopefully nature will take its course. So your goal is the smallest intervention possible to deliver the animal. Well, what I knew was that you're supposed to let it happen naturally as much as possible first. So at 6 o'clock, I'm like, we're going to give it half an hour. If she hasn't made any progress in half an hour, we're going to have to help. And this means catching a ewe who does not like to be touched. So we don't really have any ewes who like to be touched. And this has been my only regret with this flock is that they haven't been as easy to handle because they're a little squirrely. And the one who's the most easiest to handle is the one who still hasn't given birth, which is Bruni, who will let us touch her. But everybody else is like, ee! So I've been working on bribing them with sheep treats and touching them while they're eating the sheep treats just to try to get them a little bit more handleable for a few weeks. And that will continue. But she was not making progress. She was actually in pain. You could tell. The ram was in there trying to like he's super like his name is Noble, but he is going to the processor in May. He needs to get bigger before he goes to the processor. He was protective of her and didn't want us near her, but we caught her. And Tactical is particularly good at catching sheep, just so you know. He has a way of them, of tricking them, and then, like, springing and, like, clinging to them. And then they're like, oh, crap, I got caught. He's really good at that. And we got her, and I went in to get the arm reoriented so it could come out. I could not find the arm. I was finding the arm of the other one that was in there, all tangled up with this one. Neither one of them had amniotic sacs around them anymore. And I don't know how long they'd been that way, but delivered the first one. And the problem was she was not dilated enough for its head to even come out once I got it into position. So we had to assist with that. We had to pull it. And it was dead when it came out. And then I took the second one out as well, also dead. I was testing it by flicking its eyeball. And if they react when you flick their eyeball, then it could still be alive. It was not alive at all. So she delivered two stillborn. And so then we took the bottle baby and put the amniotic stuff all over the bottle baby under the hope she would adopt it. But with the ram there and without a way to enclose them into a small like manger area or something, she was like open to the idea, but then the bottle baby wasn't sure what to do. And what I needed was a small place to put them. So my lesson from this is we're going to build a small place to put them in the future. And then I talked to Bradley Bleasdale and he was like, his wife said what they do is they take a kennel panel and they put it in a circle around the baby and the mom. And that, you know, that happens. Well, okay, so this is what happens as a homesteader when you've had to do something like this for the first time. So we had two stillborn and somebody in the comments is like, sorry, that's tough. It is tough. It's what you sign up for though, when you take care of livestock. So I went the rest of the day wondering if I did the right thing, wondering if it was my fault, if I had somehow, like when I pulled them, is that what killed them? Like, have I now damaged the mom in a way that she's not going to be able to recover? And the veterinarian who does on-site visits isn't usually instantly available. And she had the day off and I'd left a message on her phone and I was like, well, this isn't an emergency. So I'm not calling her cell phone and leaving a message because I don't like to use the emergency thing unless it's an actual emergency. The mother was not hemorrhaging or anything. And I ended up just keeping an eye on her, left a message like, I think I need you to come out and look at the mother. We were going to have to decide if we were willing to put her on antibiotics or not, if that was the case. And all the sheep books are like, you could have, you know, if you've pulled the sheep, you could have torn the vaginal tissue and you need to put them proactively on antibiotics. And I'm like, well, technically I have some penicillin here, but I don't know that that's the right kind of antibiotic for this. And I don't know that I'd want to do that and blah, 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 blah. So I went all day. I felt really bad on Friday, like just really bad. And Tactical had already been scheduled to hijack the show so that I'd be freed up to get ready for Kentucky Sustainable Living. But I was having a psychologically difficult day because I was like, was it my fault? And I knew that we had another young ewe. So we had two young ewes who were pregnant before I wanted them pregnant because a ram got through a fence. And the second one was also pregnant. And I was like, we're probably gonna have to help in that one to like keep an eye on her. And he goes over to the pasture after homestead happenings. And she had already birthed two healthy little babies. So luckily we didn't have to intervene on that one. And I'm like, gah. So then the veterinarian called me at like 8 o'clock that night. She's like, I'm sorry. I was not in the office today. I was fishing with my husband and I got your message and I'm calling. Why do you think the ewe needs antibiotics? And I'm like, I don't know if she does. The book says we're supposed to put her on them and I don't know what to do. And she's like, which book? And then I told her it was like the Laura Lawson book on taking care of your ewe. And also I have from the Association of Sheep, whatever. I have this other one. Like they both say that. Everything says that. She's like, well, I wouldn't do it because people have used antibiotics on their animals way too much. And unless she's showing signs of infection, I don't recommend it. And I'm like, well, that's good because I don't have any anyway. And I don't know what kind to give her. And, you know, I'm like, so if she gets above 105 degree temperature, she said, then we should probably do something to stop the infection. But otherwise, the majority of the time, they do fine. Their system is designed to expel everything. I said, well, the afterbirth did come out and, you know, and I said, I'm not sure. I was like, well, let me ask you this. I pulled both lambs, right up next to each other. And I'm worried that I may have torn the vaginal wall some or done some damage. And she said, was she actively contracting? And I said, yes. She's like, then you're fine. She said, were you wearing gloves? And I said, no, because I was just in the pasture and I just did what I thought I needed to do. And she's like, you need to wear gloves next time. And I'm like, yeah, I know, because I could have gotten an infection in there. She's like, I'm not worried about the infection in your lamb. I'm worried about you getting an infection from your lamb. And I'm like, well, that's fair. I did wash my hands very well after. But it was just like sometimes when you make decisions, you don't make the right decision. And I could have gone and gotten gloves and then done this and it would have not changed the outcome at all. Like that 5 minutes didn't matter in this situation. And that's why I want to have like the delivery box ready to go for births in the future. But she also told me based on what I told her without the amniotic sacs around them and the fact that they were all intertwined, she said, they were already dead inside and they had to be pulled anyway. So waiting a half hour between them is not what I would have done in that situation when it was clear that they were already dead. She's like, they got to come out one way or another and it's better to get them out. So that actually helped me feel a little better about the situation. And I was doing everything I could. I was like, I'm going to go for a walk to cheer myself up. I'm going to accomplish this thing to cheer myself up. I've got to be at Kentucky Sustainable Living as an empowering personality tomorrow. And I'm not feeling very empowering this today because it sucked. And then, you know, the bottle baby kind of helped cheer me up because she's cute. So that happened. And then I went away Saturday and came back Sunday and we had the prolapse. And I'm like, literally everything, like it's not everything that can go wrong, but like, a lot of the things that you learn over time as a sheep keeper, we got to learn all in 1 week. So it was quite a heck of a week. And the reason I recommended the book, All Creatures Great and Small, at the beginning of this is that because I've read that book and because he describes, you know, and it's sheep, there's a lot of sheep things that happen in that book. And because he describes what he's had to do to deliver breech, because I haven't done a breech one where you have to go in and turn them and get them in the right position. He describes in great detail how that's done. And the fact that he did that. So it's a fiction book, right? But it's based on the perspective of an actual veterinarian. And then he also explains it in detail. So like within the framework of story is how we remember things the best. And so I literally remember a book I read when I was 10 years old that helped me when I had to go pull two stillborn sheep from a ewe. And that was really, that's why I recommend reading that book. So I also have the manuals that I've read, like, you know, theoretically things can go wrong with your sheep and here's what you do. Like, I've read that. I don't remember those details as much as I remember the details in All Creatures Great and Small, the book, right? And so that is just, that's why I'm like, gosh, if you're going to keep sheep, you should read that book. If you're going to have livestock, you should read that book and know what you're getting into, because it is really fun and rewarding to raise livestock. And it's very rewarding when you have all of the little babies on in your pasture, and they're so cute and they're delicious. We're raising them for food, right? And it's also hard sometimes. And last week was hard for a lot of reasons. One of which is what I call homesteader self-doubt, where you've taken an intervention and you're not sure it's right, but it was the only thing you knew to do at that time. And what happens, like, I haven't talked about that episode on, like, I'm in the Sheep 101 group where you can ask questions. I haven't talked about that episode there because some jerk's going to come out and be like, it's, you know, you're a terrible person and blah, blah, blah. And I didn't want to hear it. So, you know, like, usually I'm pretty immune to that stuff, but I'm already in a little bit of a fragile place right now. And somebody would just be all about it, about, you know, just verbal abuse or text-based verbal abuse. But I'm really lucky that I have a network of people who I can call and talk to. So, like, other sheep farmers. Unfortunately, none of my sheep mentors were available when all the problems were happening either, till afterwards. But that's been a source of strength. And then being at Kentucky Sustainable Living the day after that experience, I could talk to other people who raise sheep and be like, have you ever been in this situation? And what did you do? And I mean, that's why it's good to go to different events, right? You meet different people and you can share your perspectives. So that was my All Creatures Great and Small week. And I think my favorite part of the week was after we had two sets of triplets, which is six, a set of twins, which is eight. So we have seven little babies in the pasture and one little baby sometimes in the pasture and sometimes here, depending on, because we've just been letting her be in the pasture as long as it's not pouring down rain. And she'll run off and play. And then she wants to, like, if she hears the four wheeler go, she thinks that's her mom. So she wants to run to the four wheeler. It's kind of funny. She also thinks everything that's round, like a human leg, so any fence post is also her. She goes up like she's testing to see if it's her mom. So she's a little confused right now. But watching the sheep interact with their babies is hilarious because there are so many little white puffballs out there. And, you know, you think about it from the sheep's perspective, like, they all look the same to the sheep, pretty much. You know, there's some with little black lips and some without little black lips, but they're all little white puffballs. And every mom knows she has a certain number of babies, and they know who they are based on smell. So the babies know who their mom is based on smell. The mom knows who their babies are based on smell. And then when a baby gets separated from mom, they, like, go meh, and they, like, they voice their distress. And then the mom, you'll see the moms be like counting one, two, you know, like, who do I know? And then she'll count one that somebody else's, and she'll be like, wait, that's not mine. And then she'll run over to the one that's yelling, and she'll be like, are you mine? Nope, you're not mine. And so there's a lot of little baby sheep running up to mom going, are you my mom? Are you my mom? And the mom's going, are you my kid? Are you my kid? Or lamb, as the case may be. And it's just, I call it lamb chaos. In another week, they kind of figure it out. But when they're really small, it's hilarious. And then the little ones don't necessarily just nurse on their moms. That's the other thing that's happening. So the mom with triplets who is raising the triplets, I walked up there yesterday and she was raising quadruplets. Like, somebody else's lamb had decided she was her mom too. And she let them nurse, and then all of a sudden she realized what was going on. She's like, wait, not you. I've got my hands full already, man. You can't eat dinner here. So that was pretty funny to watch as well. The new you who had the twins, who was a little young, is not as good of a mom as the other ones. It's her first time. And she's like, one of them sticking with her like glue, and the other one keeps getting lost. And you're like, come on, man. Like, don't leave that one behind. Like, I don't want a second bottle baby. Yeah. Yeah. Are you my mom? Somebody types EWE instead of the word YOU. So birthing week has been trying this go around. It has been a really crazy 7 days. It's turning into 10 days now. Bruni still hasn't given birth. Everybody else was within 5 days of each other. Like, they were all basically on the same style cycle. Bruni looks like she could give birth at any moment now and still hasn't. So knowing my luck, she's going to give birth while I'm at Self-Reliance Festival, and the homestead sitter is going to get to see the little baby and have to wonder if it's all okay. But, and that's actually timing-wise about right, like 21 days after these guys were all conceived, did Bruni then cycle and get and conceive? Like, why did that happen? I don't know. But the community has been really helpful to me. And I thought today's topic was timely and a good view into what it's really like. So I thought I'd share those stories with you today. If you like the show and want to support the work I'm doing here, you can do it in two ways. One, get your coffee at hollowroast.com. Two, build community. Go to Self-Reliance Festival digitally or not. Go to Kentucky Sustainable Living. Go to Midwest Preparedness Project. Go to something. Go to all of them if you can, because the contacts you get help you when you have a week like mine. And it's not just like with the knowledge on how to deal with a prolapse, right? It's with connections so that when you're having homesteader self-doubt, you can get yourself out of it, pull yourself up by your bootstraps and go on, because that's what you got to do, right? That's how you move forward in the world. And sometimes things are hard on the homestead, and other times you just have a lot of little puffballs who are super cute little sheep babies. So anyway, with that, guys, go out, make it a great week.